Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them by J.K. Rowling. This book belongs to Harry Potter. Handwritten notes. Shared by Ron Weasley because his fell apart.
Why don't you buy a new one, then?
Write on your own book, Hermione.
You bought all those dung bombs on Saturday. You could have bought a new book instead.
Dung bombs rule! With thanks, J.K. Rowling, Comic Relief UK, and Scholastic Incorporated would like to thank the following individuals and organizations for their generous contributions in this endeavor. HarperCollins Publishers, Command Web Offset, Quebecor World, USA Corporation, R.R. Donnelly and Sons, Alliance Forest Product Incorporated, Digicon Imaging Incorporated, J.M. Wechter and Associates Incorporated, Rose Printing Company, I.C.G. Holliston, Lehigh Press Incorporated, The Display Connection Incorporated, Universal Printing Company, J.Y. International Incorporated, Sales Division of Lee Fung Asco Printers, Berryville Graphics, Von Hoffman, Leo Pacific Pier, Four Lakes Color Graphics Incorporated, Schneider National Incorporated, Combined Express Incorporated, Fay Publishing, Delta Corrugated Paper Products Corporation, Webcrafters Incorporated, Yellow Corporation. And of course, the publisher would especially like to thank J.K. Rowling for creating this book and so generously giving all her royalties from it to Comic Relief. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Newt Scamander. Special Edition, with a foreword by Albus Dumbledore. Reader's Note. Hangman's Noose Game with 11 letters. First letter A, 6th letter A, 7th letter N, 10th letter L, 11th letter A. Hangman's Body Complete. Spider with arrow pointing to Hangman and handwritten note, "You die, Weasley." Tic-tac-toe game. End of reader's note. Handwritten note. Harry loves... Moaning Myrtle crossed out. Handwritten notes.
Chudley Cannons!
Write a decent team in my book for a change, Weasley. About the author. Newton Newt Artemis Fido's Commander. Handwritten note.
Nice name!
Was born in 1897. His interest in fabulous beasts was encouraged by his mother, who was an enthusiastic breeder of fancy hippogriffs. Upon graduation from Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, Mr. Scamander joined the Ministry of Magic in the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures. After 2 years at the Office for House Elf Relocation, years he describes as tedious in the extreme, he was transferred to the Beast Division, where his prodigious knowledge of bizarre magical animals ensured his rapid promotion. Although almost solely responsible for the creation of the Werewolf Register in 1947, he says he is proudest of the ban on experimental breeding, passed in 1965, which effectively prevented the creation of new and untamable monsters within Britain. Mr. Scamander's work with the Dragon Research and Restraint Bureau led to many research trips abroad, during which he collected information for his worldwide bestseller, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, now in its 52nd edition. Newt Scamander was awarded the Order of Merlin Second Class in 1979 in recognition of his services to the study of magical beasts, magizoology. Now retired, he lives in Dorset with his wife, Porpentina, and their pet Neasels, Hoppy, Millie, and Mauler. Foreword.
I was deeply honored when Newt Scamander asked me to write the foreword
for this very special edition of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Newt's masterpiece has been an approved textbook at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry ever since its publication, and must take a substantial amount of credit for our students' consistently high results in Care of Magical Creatures examinations. Yet it is not a book to be confined to the classroom. No wizarding household is complete without a copy of Fantastic Beasts, well thumbed by the generations who have riffled its pages in search of the best way to rid the lawn of horclumps, interpret the mournful cries of the augury, or cure their pet puffskein of drinking out of the toilet. This edition, however, has a loftier purpose than the instruction of the wizarding community. For the first time in the history of the noble publishing house of Obscurus, one of its titles is to be made available to Muggles. The work of Comic Relief UK, which, funnily enough, has nothing to do with the American organization of the same name, in fighting some of the worst forms of human suffering, is well known in the Muggle world. So it is to my fellow wizards that I now address myself. Know, then, that we are not alone in recognizing the curative power of laughter, that Muggles are familiar with it too, and that they have harnessed this gift in a most imaginative way, using it to raise funds with which to help save and better lives, a brand of magic to which we all aspire. Comic Relief UK has raised over $250 million since 1985. That's also £174 million, or 34,872 galleons, 14 sickles, and 7 knuts. It is now the wizarding world's privilege to help Comic Relief in their endeavor. You hold in your hands a duplicate of Harry Potter's own copy of Fantastic Beasts, complete with his and his friend's informative notes in the margins. Although Harry seemed a trifle reluctant to allow this book to be reprinted in its present form, our friends at Comic Relief feel that his small additions will add to the entertaining tone of the book. Mr. Newt Scamander, long since resigned to the relentless graffitiing of his masterpiece, has agreed. This edition of Fantastic Beasts will be sold at Flourish and Blotts, as well as in Muggle bookshops. Everyone involved in getting this book to you, from the author to the publisher, to the paper suppliers, printers, binders, and booksellers, contributed their time, energy, and materials free or at a reduced cost, making it possible for proceeds from the sale of this book to go to a fund set up in Harry Potter's name by Comic Relief UK and J.K. Rowling. This fund was designed specifically to help children in need throughout the world. Wizards wishing to make additional donations should do so through Gringotts Wizarding Bank. Ask for Griphook. All that remains is for me to warn anyone who has read this far without purchasing the book that it carries a thief's curse. I would like to take this opportunity to reassure Muggle purchasers that the amusing creatures described hereafter are fictional and cannot hurt you. To wizards I say merely, Draco dormiens nunquam titillandus. Albus Dumbledore. Introduction. About this book. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them represents the fruit of many years' travel and research. I look back across the years to the 7-year-old wizard who spent hours in his bedroom dismembering horclumps, and I envy him the journeys to come. From darkest jungle to brightest desert, from mountain peak to marshy bog, that grubby, horclump-encrusted boy would track, as he grew up, the beasts described in the following pages. I have visited lairs, burrows, and nests across 5 continents, observed the curious habits of magical beasts in 100 countries, witnessed their powers, gained their trust, and on occasion beaten them off with my traveling kettle. The first edition of Fantastic Beasts was commissioned back in 1918 by Mr. Augustus Worm of Obscurus Books, who was kind enough to ask me whether I would consider writing an authoritative compendium of magical creatures for his publishing house. I was then but a lowly Ministry of Magic employee, and leapt at the chance both to augment my pitiful salary of 2 sickles a week and to spend my holidays traveling the globe in search of new magical species. The rest is publishing history. Fantastic Beasts is now in its 52nd edition. This introduction is intended to answer a few of the most frequently asked questions that have been arriving in my weekly postbag ever since this book was first published in 1927. The first of these is that most fundamental question of all. What is a beast? What is a beast? Handwritten note.
Big hairy thing with too many legs.
The definition of a beast has caused controversy for centuries. Though this might surprise some first-time students of magizoology, the problem might come into clearer focus if we take a moment to consider 3 types of magical creature. Werewolves spend most of their time as humans, whether wizard or muggle. Once a month, however, they transform into savage, 4-legged beasts of murderous intent and no human conscience. The centaur's habits are not human-like. They live in the wild, refuse clothing, prefer to live apart from wizards and muggles alike, and yet have intelligence equal to theirs. Trolls bear a humanoid appearance, walk upright, may be taught a few simple words, and yet are less intelligent than the dullest unicorn, and possess no magical powers in their own right, except for their prodigious and unnatural strength. We now ask ourselves, which of these creatures is a being? That is to say, a creature worthy of legal rights and a voice in the governance of the magical world, and which is a beast? Early attempts at deciding which magical creatures should be designated beasts were extremely crude. Burdock Muldoon, chief of the Wizards' Council in the 14th century, decreed that any member of the magical community that walked on 2 legs would henceforth be granted the status of being, all others to remain beasts. Footnote. The Wizards' Council preceded the Ministry of Magic. End of footnote. In a spirit of friendship, he summoned all beings to meet with the wizards at a summit to discuss new magical laws, and found to his intense dismay that he had miscalculated. The meeting hall was crammed with goblins who had brought with them as many 2-legged creatures as they could find. As Batilda Bagshot tells us in A History of Magic, little could be heard over the squawking of the diracals, the moaning of the auguries, and the relentless, piercing song of the foopers. As wizards and witches attempted to consult the papers before them, sundry pixies and fairies whirled around their heads, giggling and jabbering. A dozen or so trolls began to smash apart the chamber with their clubs, while hags glided about the place in search of children to eat. The council chief stood up to open the meeting, slipped on a pile of porlock dung, and ran cursing from the hall. As we see, the mere possession of 2 legs was no guarantee that a magical creature could or would take an interest in the affairs of wizard government. Embittered, Burdock Muldoon forswore any further attempts to integrate non-wizard members of the magical community into the Wizards' Council. Muldoon's successor, Madame Elfrida Clagg, attempted to redefine beings in the hope of creating closer ties with other magical creatures. Beings, she declared, were those who could speak the human tongue. All those who could make themselves understood to council members were therefore invited to join the next meeting. Once again, however, there were problems. Trolls, who had been taught a few simple sentences by the goblins, proceeded to destroy the hall as before. Jarvies raced around the council's chair legs, tearing at as many ankles as they could reach. Meanwhile, a large delegation of ghosts, who had been barred under Muldoon's leadership on the grounds that they did not walk on two legs but glided, attended, but left in disgust at what they later termed the council's unashamed emphasis on the needs of the living as opposed to the wishes of the dead. The centaurs, who under Muldoon had been classified as beasts and were now under Madame Clagg defined as beings, refused to attend the council in protest at the exclusion of the merpeople, who were unable to converse in anything except mermish while above water. Not until 1811 were definitions found that most of the magical community found acceptable. Grogan Stump, the newly appointed minister for magic, decreed that a being was any creature that has sufficient intelligence to understand the laws of the magical community and to bear part of the responsibility in shaping those laws. Footnote. An exception was made for the ghosts, who asserted that it was insensitive to class them as beings when they were so clearly has-beens. Stump therefore created the three divisions of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures that exist today: the Beast Division, the Being Division, and the Spirit Division. End of footnote. Troll representatives were questioned in the absence of goblins and judged not to understand anything that was being said to them. They were therefore classified as beasts, despite their two-legged gait. Merpeople were invited through translators to become beings for the first time. Fairies, pixies, and gnomes, despite their humanoid appearance, were placed firmly in the beast category. Naturally, the matter has not rested there. We are all familiar with the extremists who campaign for the classification of muggles as beasts. We are all aware that the centaurs have refused being status and requested to remain beasts. Footnote. The centaurs objected to some of the creatures with whom they were asked to share being status, such as hags and vampires, and declared that they would manage their own affairs separately from wizards. A year later, the merpeople made the same request. The Ministry of Magic accepted their demands reluctantly. Although a centaur liaison office exists in the Beast Division of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, no centaur has ever used it. Indeed, being sent to the centaur office has become an in-joke at the department, and means that the person in question is shortly to be fired. End of footnote. Werewolves, meanwhile, have been shunted between the beast and being divisions for many years. At the time of writing, there is an office for werewolf support services at the being division, whereas the werewolf registry and werewolf capture unit fall under the beast division. Several highly intelligent creatures are classified as beasts because they are incapable of overcoming their own brutal natures. Acromantulas and manticores are capable of intelligent speech, but will attempt to devour any human that goes near them. The Sphinx talks only in puzzles and riddles, and is violent when given the wrong answer. Wherever there is continued uncertainty about the classification of a beast in the following pages, I have noted it in the entry for that creature. Let us now turn to the one question that witches and wizards ask more than any other when the conversation turns to magizoology. Why don't muggles notice these creatures? A brief handwritten note.
You liar!
History of Muggle Awareness of Fantastic Beasts Astonishing though it may seem to many wizards, Muggles have not always been ignorant of the magical and monstrous creatures that we have worked so long and hard to hide. A glance through Muggle art and literature of the Middle Ages reveals that many of the creatures they now believe to be imaginary were then known to be real. The dragon, the griffin, the unicorn, the phoenix, the centaur. These and more are represented in Muggle works of that period, though usually with almost comical inexactitude. However, a closer examination of Muggle bestiaries of that period demonstrates that most magical beasts either escaped Muggle notice completely or were mistaken for something else. Examine this surviving fragment of manuscript, written by one Brother Benedict, a Franciscan monk from Worcestershire. Today, while traveling in the herb garden, I did push aside the basil to discover a ferret of monstrous size. It did not run nor hide, as ferrets are wont to do, but leapt upon me, throwing me backwards upon the ground, and crying with most unnatural fury, "Get out of it, Baldy!" It did then bite my nose so viciously that I did bleed for several hours. The friar was unwilling to believe that I had met a talking ferret, and had asked me whether I had been supping of Brother Boniface's turnip wine. As my nose was still swollen and bloody, I was excused vespers. Evidently our Muggle friend had unearthed not a ferret, as he supposed, but a jarvie, most likely in pursuit of its favorite prey, gnomes. Imperfect understanding is often more dangerous than ignorance, and the Muggles' fear of magic was undoubtedly increased by their dread of what might be lurking in their herb gardens. Muggle persecution of wizards at this time was reaching a pitch hitherto unknown, and sightings of such beasts as dragons and hippogriffs were contributing to Muggle hysteria. It is not the aim of this work to discuss the dark days that preceded the wizard's retreat into hiding. Footnote. Anyone interested in a full account of this particularly bloody period of wizarding history should consult A History of Magic by Batilda Bagshot, Little Red Books, 1947. End of footnote. All that concerns us here is the fate of those fabulous beasts that, like ourselves, would have to be concealed if Muggles were ever to be convinced there was no such thing as magic. The International Confederation of Wizards argued the matter out at their famous summit meeting of 1692. No fewer than 7 weeks of sometimes acrimonious discussion between wizards of all nationalities were devoted to the troublesome question of magical creatures. How many species would we be able to conceal from Muggle notice, and which should they be? Where and how should we hide them? The debate raged on, some creatures oblivious to the fact that their destiny was being decided, others contributing to the debate. Footnote. Delegations of centaurs, merpeople, and goblins were persuaded to attend the summit. End of footnote. At last, agreement was reached. Footnote. Except by the goblins. End of footnote. 27 species, ranging in size from dragons to bundemans, were to be hidden from Muggles, so as to create the illusion that they had never existed outside the imagination. This number was increased over the following century, as wizards became more confident in their methods of concealment. In 1750, Clause 73 was inserted in the International Code of Wizarding Secrecy, to which wizard ministries worldwide conform today. Each wizarding governing body will be responsible for the concealment, care, and control of all magical beasts, beings, and spirits dwelling within its territory's borders. Should any such creature cause harm to, or draw the notice of, the Muggle community, that nation's wizarding governing body will be subject to discipline by the International Confederation of Wizards. magical beasts in hiding. It would be idle to deny that there have been occasional breaches of Clause 73 since it was first put in place. Older British readers will remember the Ilfracombe incident of 1932, when a rogue Welsh green dragon swooped down upon a crowded beach full of sunbathing muggles. Fatalities were mercifully prevented by the brave actions of a holidaying wizarding family, subsequently awarded orders of Merlin first class, when they immediately performed the largest batch of memory charms this century on the inhabitants of Ilfracombe, thus narrowly averting catastrophe. Footnote. In his 1972 book, Muggles Who Notice, Blenheim Stalk asserts that some residents of Ilfracombe escaped the mass memory charm. To this day, a muggle bearing the nickname Dodgy Dirk holds forth in bars along the south coast on the subject of a dirty great flying lizard that punctured his lilo. End of footnote. The International Confederation of Wizards has had to fine certain nations repeatedly for contravening Clause 73. Tibet and Scotland are two of the most persistent offenders. Muggle sightings of the Yeti have been so numerous that the International Confederation of Wizards felt it necessary to station an international task force in the mountains on a permanent basis. Meanwhile, the world's largest Kelpie continues to evade capture in Loch Ness, and appears to have developed a positive thirst for publicity. These unfortunate mishaps notwithstanding, we wizards may congratulate ourselves on a job well done. There can be no doubt that the overwhelming majority of present-day Muggles refuse to believe in the magical beasts their ancestors so feared. Even those Muggles who do notice Porlock droppings or Streeler trails, it would be foolish to suppose that all traces of these creatures can be hidden, appear satisfied with the flimsiest non-magical explanation. Footnote. For a fascinating examination of this fortunate tendency of Muggles, the reader might like to consult The Philosophy of the Mundane, Why the Muggles Prefer Not to Know, Professor Mordecai Egg, Dust and Mildew, 1963. End of footnote. If any Muggle is unwise enough to confide in another that he has spotted a hippogriff winging its way north, he is generally believed to be drunk or a loony. Unfair though this may seem on the Muggle in question, it is nevertheless preferable to being burnt at the stake or drowned in the village duck pond. So how does the wizarding community hide fantastic beasts? Luckily, some species do not require much wizarding assistance in avoiding the notice of Muggles. Creatures such as the Tebow, the Demiguise, and the Bowtruckle have their own highly effective means of camouflage, and no intervention by the Ministry of Magic has ever been necessary on their behalf. Then there are those beasts that, due to cleverness or innate shyness, avoid contact with Muggles at all costs. For instance, the unicorn, the moon calf, and the centaur. Other magical creatures inhabit places inaccessible to Muggles. One thinks of the acromantula, deep in the uncharted jungle of Borneo, and the phoenix, nesting high on mountain peaks unreachable without the use of magic. Finally, and most commonly, we have beasts that are too small, too speedy, or too adept at passing for mundane animals to attract a Muggle's attention. Chizpurfles, billywigs, and crups fall into this category. Nevertheless, there are still plenty of beasts that, whether willfully or inadvertently, remain conspicuous even to the Muggle eye. And it is these that create a significant amount of work for the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures. This department, the second largest at the Ministry of Magic, deals with the varying needs of the many species under its care in a variety of different ways. Footnote. The largest department at the Ministry of Magic is the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, to which the remaining 6 departments are all, in some respect, answerable, with the possible exception of the Department of Mysteries. End of footnote. Safe habitats. Perhaps the most important step in the concealment of magical creatures is the creation of safe habitats. Muggle-repelling charms prevent trespassers into the forests where centaurs and unicorns live, and on the lakes and rivers set aside for the use of merpeople. In extreme cases, such as that of the quintuped, whole areas have been made unplottable. Footnote. When an area of land is made unplottable, it is impossible to chart on maps. End of footnote. Some of these safe areas must be kept under constant wizarding supervision. For example, dragon reservations. While unicorns and merpeople are only too happy to stay within the territories designated for their use, dragons will seek any opportunity to set forth in search of prey beyond the reservation borders. In some cases, muggle-repelling charms will not work, as the beast's own powers will cancel them. Cases in point are the Kelpie, whose sole aim in life is to attract humans towards it, and the Pogrebin, which seeks out humans for itself. Controls on selling and breeding. The possibility of a muggle being alarmed by any of the larger or more dangerous magical beasts has been greatly reduced by the severe penalties now attached to their breeding and the sale of their young and eggs. The Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures keeps a strict watch on the trade in fantastic beasts. The 1965 ban on experimental breeding has made the creation of new species illegal. Handwritten note.
But no one's told Hagrid.
Disillusionment charms. The wizard on the street also plays a part in the concealment of magical beasts. Those who own a hippogriff, for example, are bound by law to enchant the beast with a disillusionment charm, to distort the vision of any muggle who may see it. Disillusionment charms should be performed daily, as their effects are apt to wear off. Memory charms. When the worst happens and a muggle sees what he or she is not supposed to see, the memory charm is perhaps the most useful repair tool. The memory charm may be performed by the owner of the beast in question, but in severe cases of muggle notice, a team of trained obliviators may be sent in by the Ministry of Magic. The Office of Misinformation. The Office of Misinformation will become involved in only the very worst magical muggle collisions. Some magical catastrophes or accidents are simply too glaringly obvious to be explained away by muggles without the help of an outside authority. The Office of Misinformation will, in such a case, liaise directly with the Muggle Prime Minister to seek a plausible non-magical explanation for the event. The unstinting efforts of this office in persuading muggles that all photographic evidence of the Loch Ness Kelpie is fake have gone some way to salvaging a situation that at one time looked exceedingly dangerous. Why magizoology matters. The measures described above merely hint at the full scope and extent of the work done by the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures. It remains only to answer that question to which we all, in our hearts, know the answer. Why do we continue, as a community and as individuals, to attempt to protect and conceal magical beasts, even those that are savage and untamable? The answer is, of course, to ensure that future generations of witches and wizards enjoy their strange beauty and powers as we have been privileged to do. I offer this work as a mere introduction to the wealth of fantastic beasts that inhabit our world. 75 species are described in the following pages. But I do not doubt that sometime this year yet another will be discovered, necessitating a 53rd revised edition of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. In the meantime, I will merely add that it affords me great pleasure to think that generations of young witches and wizards have grown to a fuller knowledge and understanding of the fantastic beasts I love through the pages of this book. Ministry of Magic Classifications. The Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures gives classifications to all known beasts, beings, and spirits. These offer an at-a-glance guide to the perceived dangerousness of a creature. The five categories are as follows. Ministry of Magic, MOM, Classification. XXXXX, Known Wizard Killer, handwritten note, or anything Hagrid likes, impossible to train or domesticate. XXXX, dangerous, requires specialist knowledge, skilled wizard may handle. XXX, competent wizard should cope. XX, harmless, may be domesticated. X, boring. In some cases, I have felt an explanation for the classification of a particular beast is necessary, and have added footnotes accordingly. An A to Z of Fantastic Beasts. Acromantula, MOM classification, XXXXX, handwritten note, XXXXXXXXX. The Acromantula is a monstrous eight-eyed spider capable of human speech. It originated in Borneo, where it inhabits dense jungle. Its distinctive features include the thick black hair that covers its body, its leg span, which may reach up to 15 feet, its pincers, which produce a distinctive clicking sound when the Acromantula is excited or angry, and a poisonous secretion. The Acromantula is carnivorous and prefers large prey. It spins dome-shaped webs upon the ground. The female is bigger than the male and may lay up to 100 eggs at a time. Soft and white, these are as large as beach balls. The young hatch in 6 to 8 weeks. Acromantula eggs are defined as Class A non-tradable goods by the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, meaning that severe penalties are attached to their importation or sale. This beast is believed to be wizard-bred, possibly intended to guard wizard dwellings or treasure, as is often the case with magically created monsters. Footnote: beasts capable of human speech are rarely self-taught. An exception is the Jarvi. The ban on experimental breeding did not come into effect until this century, long after the first recorded sighting of an Acromantula in 1794. End of footnote. Despite its near-human intelligence, the Acromantula is untrainable and highly dangerous to wizard and muggle alike. Rumors that a colony of Acromantula has been established in Scotland are unconfirmed. Unconfirmed crossed out. Handwritten note. Confirmed by Harry Potter and Ron Weasley. Ashwinder, MOM classification, XXX. The Ashwinder is created when a magical fire is allowed to burn unchecked for too long. Footnote. Any fire to which a magical substance, such as flue powder, has been added. End of footnote. A thin, pale gray serpent with glowing red eyes, it will rise from the embers of an unsupervised fire and slither away into the shadows of the dwelling in which it finds itself, leaving an ashy trail behind it. The Ashwinder lives for only an hour and during that time seeks a dark and secluded spot in which to lay its eggs, after which it will collapse into dust. Ashwinder eggs are brilliant red and give off intense heat. They will ignite the dwelling within minutes, if not found and frozen with a suitable charm. Any wizard realizing that one or more Ashwinders are loose in the house must trace them immediately and locate the nest of eggs. Once frozen, these eggs are of great value for use in love potions, and may be eaten whole as a cure for ague. Ashwinders are found worldwide. Augury, also known as Irish Phoenix. MOM classification, XX. The augury is a native of Britain and Ireland, though sometimes found elsewhere in Northern Europe. A thin and mournful-looking bird, somewhat like a small and underfed vulture in appearance, the augury is greenish-black. It is intensely shy, nests in bramble and thorn, eats large insects and fairies, flies only in heavy rain, and otherwise remains hidden in its tear-shaped nest. The augury has a distinctive low and throbbing cry, which was once believed to foretell death. Wizards avoided augury nests for fear of hearing that heart-rending sound, and more than one wizard is believed to have suffered a heart attack on passing a thicket and hearing an unseen augury wail. Footnote. Uric the Oddball is known to have slept in a room containing no fewer than 50 pet auguries. During one particularly wet winter, Uric became convinced by the moaning of his auguries that he had died and was now a ghost. His subsequent attempts to walk through the walls of his house resulted in what his biographer, Rodolphus Pittaman, describes as a concussion of 10 days' duration. End of footnote. Patient research eventually revealed, however, that the augury merely sings at the approach of rain. Footnote. See Why I Didn't Die When the Augury Cried, by Gulliver Pokeby, 1824. Little Red Books. End of footnote. The augury has since enjoyed a vogue as a home weather forecaster, though many find its almost continual moaning during the winter months difficult to bear. Augury feathers are useless as quills because they repel ink. Basilisk, also known as the King of Serpents. MOM classification, XXXXX. The first recorded basilisk was bred by Herpo the Fowl, a Greek dark wizard and parcel-mouth who discovered after much experimentation that a chicken egg hatched beneath a toad would produce a gigantic serpent possessed of extraordinarily dangerous powers. The basilisk is a brilliant green serpent that may reach up to 50 feet in length. The male has a scarlet plume upon its head. It has exceptionally venomous fangs, but its most dangerous means of attack is the gaze of its large yellow eyes. Anyone looking directly into these will suffer instant death. If the food source is sufficient, the basilisk will eat all mammals and birds, and most reptiles. The serpent may attain a very great age. Herpo the Fowl's basilisk is believed to have lived for close on 900 years. The creation of basilisks has been illegal since medieval times, although the practice is easily concealed by simply removing the chicken egg from beneath the toad when the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures comes to call. However, since basilisks are uncontrollable except by parcel mouths, they are as dangerous to most dark wizards as to anybody else, and there have been no recorded sightings of basilisks in Britain for at least 400 years. Handwritten note, that's what you think. Billywig, MOM classification XXX. The billywig is an insect native to Australia. It is around half an inch long and a vivid sapphire blue, although its speed is such that it is rarely noticed by muggles, and often not by wizards until they have been stung. The billywig's wings are attached to the top of its head, and are rotated very fast, so that it spins as it flies. At the bottom of the body is a long, thin sting. Those who have been stung by a billywig suffer giddiness followed by levitation. Generations of young Australian witches and wizards have attempted to catch billywigs and provoke them into stinging in order to enjoy these side effects, though too many stings may cause the victim to hover uncontrollably for days on end, and where there is a severe allergic reaction, permanent floating may ensue. Dried billywig stings are used in several potions, and are believed to be a component in the popular sweet Fizzing Whizbees. Handwritten note.
Last time I eat them, then.
Bow truckle. MOM classification XX. The bow truckle is a tree guardian creature found mainly in the west of England, southern Germany, and certain Scandinavian forests. It is immensely difficult to spot, being small, maximum 8 inches in height, and apparently made of bark and twigs, with two small brown eyes. The bow truckle, which eats insects, is a peaceable and intensely shy creature, but if the tree in which it lives is threatened, it has been known to leap down upon the woodcutter or tree surgeon attempting to harm its home and gouge at their eyes with its long, sharp fingers. An offering of woodlice will placate the bow truckle long enough to let a witch or wizard remove wandwood from its tree. Bundaman. MOM classification XXX. Bundamans are found worldwide. Skilled at creeping under floorboards and behind skirting boards, they infest houses. The presence of a Bundaman is usually announced by a foul stench of decay. The Bundaman oozes a secretion which rots away the very foundations of the dwelling in which it is found. The Bundaman at rest resembles a patch of greenish fungus with eyes, though when alarmed it will scuttle away on its numerous spindly legs. It feeds on dirt. Scouring charms will rid a house of an infestation of Bundamans, though if they have been allowed to grow too large, the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, Pest Subdivision, should be contacted before the house collapses. Diluted Bundaman secretion is used in certain magical cleaning fluids. Centaur. MOM classification XXXX. Footnote. The centaur is given an XXXX classification not because it is unduly aggressive, but because it should be treated with great respect. The same applies to merpeople and unicorns. End of footnote. The centaur has a human head, torso, and arms joined to a horse's body, which may be any of several colors. Being intelligent and capable of speech, it should not, strictly speaking, be termed a beast, but by its own request it has been classified as such by the Ministry of Magic. See the introduction to this book. The centaur is forest-dwelling. Centaurs are believed to have originated in Greece, though there are now centaur communities in many parts of Europe. Wizarding authorities in each of the countries where centaurs are found have allocated areas where the centaurs will not be troubled by muggles. However, centaurs stand in little need of wizard protection, having their own means of hiding from humans. The ways of the centaur are shrouded in mystery. They are, generally speaking, as mistrustful of wizards as they are of muggles, and indeed seem to make little differentiation between us. They live in herds ranging in size from 10 to 50 members. They are reputed to be well versed in magical healing, divination, archery, and astronomy. Chimera. MOM classification XXXXX. The Chimera is a rare Greek monster with a lion's head, a goat's body, and a dragon's tail. Vicious and bloodthirsty, the Chimera is extremely dangerous. There is only one known instance of the successful slaying of a Chimera, and the unlucky wizard concerned fell to his death from his winged horse. See page 42, shortly afterwards, exhausted by his efforts. Chimera eggs are classified as Class A non-tradable goods. Handwritten note. So Hagrid'll be getting some any time now. Chizpurfle. MOM classification XX. Chizpurfles are small parasites up to a 20th of an inch high, crab-like in appearance, with large fangs. They are attracted by magic, and may infest the fur and feathers of such creatures as crups and auguries. They will also enter wizard dwellings and attack magical objects such as wands, gradually gnawing their way through to the magical core, or else settle in dirty cauldrons, where they will gorge upon any lingering drops of potion. Footnote. In the absence of magic, Chizpurfles have been known to attack electrical objects from within. For a fuller understanding of what electricity is, see Home Life and Social Habits of British Muggles, Wilhelm Wigworthy, Little Red Books, 1987. Chizpurfle infestations explain the puzzling failure of many relatively new Muggle electrical artifacts. End of footnote. Though chizpurfles are easy enough to destroy with any of a number of patented potions on the market, severe infestations may require a visit from the Pest Subdivision of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, as chizpurfles swollen with magical substances will prove very hard to fight. Clabbert. MOM classification XX. The clabbert is a tree-dwelling creature, in appearance something like a cross between a monkey and a frog. It originated in the southern states of America, though it has since been exported worldwide. The smooth and hairless skin is a mottled green. The hands and feet are webbed, and the arms and legs are long and supple, enabling the clabbert to swing between branches with the agility of an orangutan. The head has short horns, and the wide mouth, which appears to be grinning, is full of razor-sharp teeth. The clabbert feeds mostly on small lizards and birds. The clabbert's most distinctive feature is the large pustule in the middle of its forehead, which turns scarlet and flashes when it senses danger. American wizards once kept clabberts in their gardens to give early warning of approaching Muggles. But the International Confederation of Wizards has introduced fines which have largely ended this practice. The sight of a tree at night full of glowing clabbert pustules, while decorative, attracted too many Muggles wishing to ask why their neighbors still had their Christmas lights up in June. Krupp. MOM classification XXX. The Krupp originated in the southeast of England. It closely resembles a Jack Russell Terrier, except for the forked tail. The Krupp is almost certainly a wizard-created dog, as it is intensely loyal to wizards and ferocious towards Muggles. It is a great scavenger, eating anything from gnomes to old tires. Krupp licenses may be obtained from the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures on completion of a simple test to prove that the applicant wizard is capable of controlling the Krupp in Muggle-inhabited areas. Krupp owners are legally obliged to remove the Krupp's tail with a painless severing charm while the Krupp is 6 to 8 weeks old, lest Muggles notice it. Demiguise. MOM classification XXXX. The demiguise is found in the Far East, though only with great difficulty, for this beast is able to make itself invisible when threatened, and can be seen only by wizards skilled in its capture. The demiguise is a peaceful herbivorous beast, something like a graceful ape in appearance, with large, black, doleful eyes, more often than not, hidden by its hair. The whole body is covered with long, fine, silky, silvery hair. Demiguise pelts are highly valued, as the hair may be spun into invisibility cloaks. Diracol, MOM classification XX. The diracol originated in Mauritius. A plump-bodied, fluffy-feathered, flightless bird, the diracol is remarkable for its method of escaping danger. It can vanish in a puff of feathers and reappear elsewhere. The phoenix shares this ability. See page 32. Interestingly, Muggles were once fully aware of the existence of the diracol, though they knew it by the name of Dodo. Unaware that the diracol could vanish at will, Muggles believe they have hunted the species to extinction. As this seems to have raised Muggle awareness of the dangers of slaying their fellow creatures indiscriminately, the International Confederation of Wizards has never deemed it appropriate that the Muggles should be made aware of the continued existence of the diracol. Doxy, sometimes known as Biting Fairy. MOM classification XXX. The doxy is often mistaken for a fairy. See page 16. Though it is a quite separate species. Like the fairy, it has a minute human form, though in the doxy's case this is covered in thick black hair and has an extra pair of arms and legs. The doxy's wings are thick, curved, and shiny, much like a beetle's. Doxies are found throughout northern Europe and America, preferring cold climates. They lay up to 500 eggs at a time and bury them. The eggs hatch in 2 to 3 weeks. Doxies have double rows of sharp, venomous teeth. An antidote should be taken if bitten. Dragon. MOM classification XXXXX. Probably the most famous of all magical beasts, dragons are among the most difficult to hide. The female is generally larger and more aggressive than the male, though neither should be approached by any but highly skilled and trained wizards. Dragon hide, blood, heart, liver, and horn all have highly magical properties. But dragon eggs are defined as Class A non-tradable goods. There are 10 breeds of dragon, though these have been known to interbreed on occasion, producing rare hybrids. Purebred dragons are as follows. Antipodean opali. The opali is a native of New Zealand, though it has been known to migrate to Australia when territory becomes scarce in its native land. Unusually for a dragon, it dwells in valleys rather than mountains. It is of medium size, between 2 and 3 tons. Perhaps the most beautiful type of dragon, it has iridescent pearly scales and glittering multicolored pupilless eyes, hence its name. This dragon produces a very vivid scarlet flame, though by dragon standards it is not particularly aggressive, and will rarely kill unless hungry. Its favorite food is sheep, though it has been known to attack larger prey. A spate of kangaroo killings in the late 1970s were attributed to a male opali ousted from his homeland by a dominant female. Opali eggs are pale gray, and may be mistaken for fossils by unwary Muggles. Chinese fireball, sometimes known as lion dragon. The only oriental dragon has a particularly striking appearance. Scarlet and smooth-scaled, it has a fringe of golden spikes around its snub-snouted face and extremely protuberant eyes. The fireball gained its name for the mushroom-shaped flame that bursts from its nostrils when it is angered. It weighs between 2 and 4 tons, the female being larger than the male. Eggs are a vivid crimson, speckled with gold, and the shells are much prized for use in Chinese wizardry. The fireball is aggressive, but more tolerant of its own species than most dragons, sometimes consenting to share its territory with up to 2 others. The fireball will feast on most mammals, though it prefers pigs and humans. Common Welsh Green. The Welsh green blends well with the lush grass of its homeland, though it nests in the higher mountains, where a reservation has been established for its preservation. The Ilfracombe incident notwithstanding, see introduction, this breed is among the least troublesome of the dragons, preferring, like the opali, to prey on sheep, and actively avoiding humans unless provoked. The Welsh green has an easily recognizable and surprisingly melodious roar. Fire is issued in thin jets. The Welsh green's eggs are an earthy brown, flecked with green. Hebridean Black. Britain's other native dragon is more aggressive than its Welsh counterpart. It requires a territory of as much as 100 square miles per dragon. Up to 30 feet in length, the Hebridean Black is rough-scaled, with brilliant purple eyes and a line of shallow but razor-sharp ridges along its back. Its tail is tipped by an arrow-shaped spike, and it has bat-like wings. The Hebridean Black feeds mostly on deer, though it has been known to carry off large dogs and even cattle. The wizard clan McFusty, who have dwelled in the Hebrides for centuries, have traditionally taken responsibility for the management of their native dragons. Hungarian Horntail. Supposedly the most dangerous, handwritten note, you're not kidding, of all dragon breeds, the Hungarian Horntail has black scales and is lizard-like in appearance. It has yellow eyes, bronze horns, and similarly colored spikes that protrude from its long tail. The horntail has one of the longest fire-breathing ranges, up to 50 feet. Its eggs are cement-colored and particularly hard-shelled. The young club their way out using their tails, whose spikes are well-developed at birth. The Hungarian horntail feeds on goats, sheep, and, whenever possible, humans. Norwegian Ridgeback. Crossed out. Handwritten note. Baby Norbert. The Norwegian Ridgeback resembles the horntail in most respects, though instead of tail spikes, it sports particularly prominent jet-black ridges along its back. Exceptionally aggressive to its own kind, the Ridgeback is nowadays one of the rarer dragon breeds. It has been known to attack most kinds of large land mammal, and, unusually for a dragon, the Ridgeback will also feed on water-dwelling creatures. An unsubstantiated report alleges that a Ridgeback carried off a whale calf off the coast of Norway in 1802. Ridgeback eggs are black, and the young develop fire-breathing abilities earlier than other breeds, at between 1 and 3 months. Peruvian Viper Tooth. This is the smallest of all known dragons, and the swiftest in flight. A mere 15 feet or so in length, the Peruvian Viper Tooth is smooth-scaled and copper-colored, with black ridge markings. The horns are short, and the fangs are particularly venomous. The viper tooth will feed readily on goats and cows, but has such a liking for humans that the International Confederation of Wizards was forced to send in exterminators in the late 19th century to reduce viper tooth numbers, which had been increasing with alarming rapidity. Romanian Longhorn. The longhorn has dark green scales and long, glittering golden horns with which it gores its prey before roasting it. When powdered, these horns are highly valued as potion ingredients. The native territory of the longhorn has now become the world's most important dragon reservation, where wizards of all nationalities study a variety of dragons at close range. The longhorn has been the subject of an intensive breeding program because its numbers have fallen so low in recent years, largely because of the trade in its horns, which are now defined as a Class B tradable material. Swedish Short Snout. The Swedish Short Snout is an attractive silvery blue dragon, whose skin is sought after for the manufacture of protective gloves and shields. The flame that issues from its nostrils is a brilliant blue, and can reduce timber and bone to ash in a matter of seconds. The Short Snout has fewer human killings to its name than most dragons, though as it prefers to live in wild and uninhabited mountainous areas, this is not much to its credit. Ukrainian Iron Belly. The largest breed of dragon, the Iron Belly has been known to achieve a weight of 6 tons. Rotund and slower in flight than the Viper Tooth or the Longhorn, the Iron Belly is nevertheless extremely dangerous, capable of crushing dwellings on which it lands. The scales are metallic gray, the eyes deep red, and the talons particularly long and vicious. Iron Bellies have been subject to constant observation by the Ukrainian wizarding authorities ever since an Iron Belly carried off a mercifully empty sailing boat from the Black Sea in 1799. Dugbog. MOM classification XXX. The Dugbog is a marsh-dwelling creature found in Europe and North and South America. It resembles a piece of dead wood while stationary, though closer examination will reveal finned paws and very sharp teeth. It glides and slithers through marshland, feeding mainly on small mammals, and will do severe injury to the ankles of human walkers. The Dugbog's favorite food, however, is mandrake. Mandrake growers have been known to seize the leaves of one of their prize plants only to find a bloody mangled mess below, owing to the attentions of a Dugbog. Urkling. MOM classification XXXX. The Urkling is an elfish creature which originated in the Black Forest in Germany. It is larger than a gnome, 3 feet high on average, with a pointed face and a high-pitched cackle that is particularly entrancing to children, whom it will attempt to lure away from their guardians and eat. Strict controls by the German Ministry of Magic, however, have reduced Urkling killings dramatically over the last few centuries, and the last known Urkling attack upon the 6-year-old wizard Bruno Schmidt resulted in the death of the Urkling when Master Schmidt hit it very hard over the head with his father's collapsible cauldron. Rumpant. MOM classification XXXX. The Rumpant is a large gray African beast of great power. Weighing up to a ton, the Rumpant may be mistaken for a rhinoceros at a distance. It has a thick hide that repels most charms and curses, a large, sharp horn upon its nose, and a long, rope-like tail. Rumpants give birth to only one calf at a time. The Rumpant will not attack unless sorely provoked, but should it charge, the results are usually catastrophic. The Rumpant's horn can pierce everything from skin to metal, and contains a deadly fluid which will cause whatever is injected with it to explode. Rumpant numbers are not great, as males frequently explode each other during the mating season. They are treated with great caution by African wizards. The Rumpant horns, tails, and the exploding fluid are all used in potions, though classified as Class B tradable materials, dangerous and subject to strict control. Fairy. MOM classification, XX. The fairy is a small and decorative beast of little intelligence. Footnote. Muggles have a great weakness for fairies, which feature in a variety of tales written for their children. These fairy tales involve winged beings with distinct personalities and the ability to converse as humans, though often in a nauseatingly sentimental fashion. Fairies, as envisaged by the Muggle, inhabit tiny dwellings fashioned out of flower petals, hollowed-out toadstools, and similar. They are often depicted as carrying wands. Of all magical beasts, the fairy might be said to have received the best Muggle press. End of footnote. Often used or conjured by wizards for decoration, the fairy generally inhabits woodlands or glades. Ranging in height from 1 to 5 inches, the fairy has a minute humanoid body, head, and limbs, but sports large insect-like wings, which may be transparent or multicolored, according to type. The fairy possesses a weak brand of magic that it may use to deter predators, such as the augury. It has a quarrelsome nature, but being excessively vain, it will become docile on any occasion when it is called to act as an ornament. Despite its human-like appearance, the fairy cannot speak. It makes a high-pitched buzzing noise to communicate with its fellows. The fairy lays up to 50 eggs at a time on the underside of leaves. The eggs hatch into brightly colored larvae. At the age of 6 to 10 days, these spin themselves a cocoon, from which they emerge 1 month later as fully formed winged adults. Fire crab, MOM classification XXX. Despite its name, the fire crab greatly resembles a large tortoise with a heavily jeweled shell. In its native Fiji, a stretch of coast has been turned into a reservation for its protection, not only against Muggles, who might be tempted by its valuable shell, but also against unscrupulous wizards, who use the shells as highly prized cauldrons. The fire crab does, however, have its own defense mechanism. It shoots flames from its rear end when attacked. Fire crabs are exported as pets, but a special license is necessary. Flobberworm, MOM classification X. The flobberworm lives in damp ditches. A thick brown worm reaching up to 10 inches in length, the flobberworm moves very little. One end is indistinguishable from the other, both producing the mucus from which its name is derived, and which is sometimes used to thicken potions. The flobberworm's preferred food is lettuce, though it will eat almost any vegetation. Fwooper, MOM classification XXX. The fwooper is an African bird with extremely vivid plumage. Fwoopers may be orange, pink, lime green, or yellow. The fwooper has long been a provider of fancy quills, and also lays brilliantly patterned eggs. Though at first enjoyable, fwooper's song will eventually drive the listener to insanity, and the fwooper is consequently sold with a silencing charm upon it, which will need monthly reinforcement. Footnote. Yurik the Oddball attempted at one time to prove that Fwooper's song was actually beneficial to the health, and listened to it for 3 months on end without a break. Unfortunately, the Wizards' Council to which he reported his findings were unconvinced, as he had arrived at the meeting wearing nothing but a toupee that on closer inspection proved to be a dead badger. End of footnote. Fwooper owners require licenses, as the creatures must be handled responsibly. Ghoul, MOM classification XX. The ghoul, though ugly, is not a particularly dangerous creature. It resembles a somewhat slimy, buck-toothed ogre, and generally resides in attics or barns belonging to wizards, where it eats spiders and moths. It moans and occasionally throws objects around, but is essentially simple-minded, and will at worst growl alarmingly at anyone who stumbles across it. A ghoul task force exists at the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures to remove ghouls from dwellings that have passed into Muggle hands. But in wizarding families, the ghoul often becomes a talking point or even a family pet. Glumbumble. Handwritten note. Bum circled. MOM classification. XXX. The Glumbumble, Northern Europe, is a gray, furry-bodied flying insect that produces melancholy-inducing treacle, which is used as an antidote to the hysteria produced by eating alahotsi leaves. It has been known to infest beehives, with disastrous effects on the honey. Glumbumbles nest in dark and secluded places, such as hollow trees and caves. They feed on nettles. Gnome. MOM classification XX. The gnome is a common garden pest found throughout Northern Europe and North America. It may reach a foot in height, with a disproportionately large head and hard, bony feet. The gnome can be expelled from the garden by swinging it in circles until dizzy and then dropping it over the garden wall. Alternatively, a jarvie may be used, though many wizards nowadays find this method of gnome control too brutal. Graphorn. MOM classification XXXX. The graphorn is found in mountainous European regions. Large and grayish-purple with a humped back, the graphorn has two very long, sharp horns, walks on large, four-thumbed feet, and has an extremely aggressive nature. Mountain trolls can occasionally be seen mounted on graphorns, though the latter do not seem to take kindly to attempts to tame them, and it is more common to see a troll covered in graphorn scars. Powdered graphorn horn is used in many potions, though it is immensely expensive owing to the difficulty in collecting it. Graphorn hide is even tougher than a dragon's, and repels most spells. Griffin. MOM classification XXXX. The griffin originated in Greece, and has the front legs and head of a giant eagle, but the body and hind legs of a lion. Like sphinxes, see page 39, griffins are often employed by wizards to guard treasure. Though griffins are fierce, a handful of skilled wizards have been known to befriend one. Griffins feed on raw meat. Grindylo. MOM classification XX. A horned, pale-green water demon, the Grindylow is found in lakes throughout Britain and Ireland. It feeds on small fish and is aggressive towards wizards and muggles alike, though merpeople have been known to domesticate it. The Grindylow has very long fingers, which, though they exert a powerful grip, are easy to break. Hippocampus. MOM classification XXX. Originating in Greece, the hippocampus has the head and forequarters of a horse and the tail and hindquarters of a giant fish. Though the species is usually to be found in the Mediterranean, a superb blue roan specimen was caught by merpeople off the shores of Scotland in 1949 and subsequently domesticated by them. The hippocampus lays large, semi-transparent eggs, through which the tadpole may be seen. Hippogriff. MOM classification XXX. The hippogriff is native to Europe, though now found worldwide. It has the head of a giant eagle and the body of a horse. It can be tamed, though this should be attempted only by experts. Handwritten note. Has Hagrid read this book? Eye contact should be maintained when approaching a hippogriff. Bowing shows good intentions. If the hippogriff returns the greeting, it is safe to draw closer. The hippogriff burrows for insects, but will also eat birds and small mammals. Breeding hippogriffs build nests upon the ground into which they will lay a single large and fragile egg, which hatches within 24 hours. The fledgling hippogriff should be ready to fly within a week, though it will be a matter of months before it is able to accompany its parent on longer journeys. Horklump, MOM classification X. The horklump comes from Scandinavia, but is now widespread throughout northern Europe. It resembles a fleshy, pinkish mushroom covered in sparse, wiry black bristles. A prodigious breeder, the horklump will cover an average garden in a matter of days. It spreads sinewy tentacles rather than roots into the ground to search for its preferred food of earthworms. The horklump is a favorite delicacy of gnomes, but otherwise has no discernible use. Imp, MOM classification XX. The imp is found only in Britain and Ireland. It is sometimes confused with the pixie. They are of similar height, between 6 and 8 inches, though the imp cannot fly as the pixie can, nor is it as vividly colored. The imp is usually dark brown to black. It does, however, have a similar slapstick sense of humor. Its preferred terrain is damp and marshy, and it is often found near river banks, where it will amuse itself by pushing and tripping the unwary. Imps eat small insects and have breeding habits much like the fairies, though imps do not spin cocoons. The young are hatched fully formed at around 1 inch in length. Jarvie, MOM classification XXX. The jarvie is found in Britain, Ireland, and North America. It resembles an overgrown ferret in most respects, except for the fact that it can talk. True conversation, however, is beyond the wit of the jarvie, which tends to confine itself to short and often rude phrases in an almost constant stream. Jarvies live mostly below ground, where they pursue gnomes, though they will also eat moles, rats, and voles. Jobbernoll, MOM classification XX. The jobbernoll, Northern Europe and America, is a tiny blue speckled bird which eats small insects. It makes no sound until the moment of its death, at which point it lets out a long scream made up of every sound it has ever heard, regurgitated backwards. Jobbernoll feathers are used in truth serums and memory potions. Kappa, MOM classification XXXX. The kappa is a Japanese, handwritten note, Snape hasn't read this either, water demon that inhabits shallow ponds and rivers. Often said to look like a monkey with fish scales instead of fur, it has a hollow in the top of its head in which it carries water. The kappa feeds on human blood, but may be persuaded not to harm a person if it is thrown a cucumber with that person's name carved into it. In confrontation, a wizard should trick the kappa into bowing. If it does so, the water in the hollow of its head will run out, depriving it of all its strength. Kelpie, MOM classification XXXX. This British and Irish water demon can take various shapes, though it most often appears as a horse with bulrushes for a mane. Having lured the unwary onto its back, it will dive straight to the bottom of its river or lake and devour the rider, letting the entrails float to the surface. The correct means to overcome a kelpie is to get a bridle over its head with a placement charm, which renders it docile and unthreatening. The world's largest kelpie is found in Loch Ness, Scotland. Its favorite form is that of a sea serpent. See page 38. International Confederation of Wizard Observers realized that they were not dealing with a true serpent when they saw it turn into an otter on the approach of a team of Muggle investigators, and then transform back into a serpent when the coast was clear. Gnarl. MOM classification XXX. The gnarl, Northern Europe and America, is usually mistaken for a hedgehog by Muggles. The two species are indeed indistinguishable, except for one important behavioral difference. If food is left out in the garden for a hedgehog, it will accept and enjoy the gift. If food is offered to a gnarl, on the other hand, it will assume that the householder is attempting to lure it into a trap and will savage that householder's garden plants or garden ornaments. Many a Muggle child has been accused of vandalism when an offended gnarl was the real culprit. Neasel. MOM classification XXX. The neasel was originally bred in Britain, though it is now exported worldwide. A small cat-like creature with flecked, speckled, or spotted fur, outsize ears, and a tail like a lion's, the neasel is intelligent, independent, and occasionally aggressive, though if it takes a liking to a witch or wizard, it makes an excellent pet. The neasel has an uncanny ability to detect unsavory or suspicious characters, and can be relied upon to guide its owner safely home if they are lost. Neasels have up to 8 kittens in a litter, and can interbreed with cats. Licenses are required for ownership, as, like crups and whoopers, neasels are sufficiently unusual in appearance to attract Muggle interest. Leprechaun, sometimes known as chloricorn. MOM classification XXX. More intelligent than the fairy and less malicious than the imp, the pixie, or the doxy, the leprechaun is nevertheless mischievous. Found only in Ireland, it achieves a height of up to 6 inches and is green in color. It has been known to create crude clothing from leaves. Alone of the little people, leprechauns can speak, though they have never requested reclassification as beings. The leprechaun bears live young and lives mostly in forest and woodland areas, though it enjoys attracting Muggle attention and as a consequence features almost as heavily as the fairy in Muggle literature for children. Leprechauns produce a realistic gold-like substance that vanishes after a few hours, to their great amusement. Handwritten note: "But not mine. R.W." Leprechauns eat leaves, and despite their reputation as pranksters, are not known ever to have done lasting damage to a human. Lethifold, also known as living shroud. MOM classification XXXXX. The lethifold is a mercifully rare creature, found solely in tropical climates. It resembles a black cloak, perhaps half an inch thick, thicker if it has recently killed and digested a victim, which glides along the ground at night. The earliest account we have of a lethifold was written by the wizard Flavius Belby, who was fortunate enough to survive a lethifold attack in 1782 while holidaying in Papua New Guinea. "Near 1 o'clock in the morning, as I began at last to feel drowsy, I heard a soft rustling close by. Believing it to be nothing more than the leaves of the tree outside, I turned over in bed, with my back to the window, and caught sight of what appeared to be a shapeless black shadow sliding underneath my bedroom door. I lay motionless, trying sleepily to divine what was causing such a shadow in a room lit only by moonlight. Undoubtedly, my stillness led the lethifold to believe that its potential victim was sleeping.
To my horror, the shadow began to creep up the bed, and I felt its slight weight upon me. It resembled nothing so much as a rippling black cape, the edges fluttering slightly as it slithered up the bed towards me. Paralyzed with fear, I felt its clammy touch upon my chin before I sat bolt upright. The thing attempted to smother me, sliding inexorably up my face, over my mouth and nostrils. But still I struggled, feeling it wrapping its coldness about me all the while. Unable to cry for assistance, I groped for my wand. Now dizzy as the thing sealed itself about my face, incapable of drawing breath, I concentrated with all my might upon the stupefying charm, and then, as that failed to subdue the creature, though blasting a hole in my bedroom door, upon the impediment hex, which likewise availed me not. Still struggling madly, I rolled sideways and fell heavily to the floor, now entirely wrapped in the letterfold. I knew that I was about to lose consciousness completely as I suffocated. Desperately, I mustered up my last reserve of energy. Pointing my wand away from myself into the deadly folds of the creature, summoning the memory of the day I had been voted president of the local Gobstones Club, I performed the Patronus charm. Almost at once I felt fresh air upon my face. I looked up to see that deathly shadow being thrown into the air upon the horns of my Patronus. It flew across the room and slithered swiftly out of sight. As Belby so dramatically reveals, the Patronus is the only spell known to repel the letherfold. Since it generally attacks the sleeping, though, its victims rarely have a chance to use any magic against it. Once its prey has been successfully suffocated, the letherfold digests its food there and then in their bed. It then exits the house slightly thicker and fatter than before, leaving no trace of itself or its victim behind. Footnote: the number of letherfold victims is almost impossible to calculate, since it leaves no clues to its presence behind it. Easier to calculate is the number of wizards who have, for their own unscrupulous purposes, pretended to have been killed by letherfolds. The most recent instance of such duplicity occurred in 1973, when the wizard Janus Dickey vanished, leaving only a hastily written note on the bedside table reading, "Oh no, a letherfold's got me. I'm suffocating." Convinced by the spotless and empty bed that such a creature had indeed killed Janus, his wife and children entered a period of strict mourning, which was rudely interrupted when Janus was discovered living 5 miles away with the landlady of the Green Dragon. End of footnote. Lobalug. MOM classification XXX. The lobalug is found at the bottom of the North Sea. It is a simple creature, 10 inches long, comprising a rubbery spout and a venom sac. When threatened, the lobalug contracts its venom sac, blasting the attacker with poison. Merpeople use the lobalug as a weapon, and wizards have been known to extract its poison for use in potions, though this practice is strictly controlled. Mackled Malaclaw, MOM classification XXX. The Malaclaw is a land-dwelling creature found mostly on rocky coastlines around Europe. Despite its passing resemblance to the lobster, it should on no account be eaten, as its flesh is unfit for human consumption, and will result in a high fever and an unsightly greenish rash. The Malaclaw can reach a length of 12 inches, and is light gray with deep green spots. It eats small crustaceans, and will attempt to tackle larger prey. The Malaclaw's bite has the unusual side effect of making the victim highly unlucky for a period of up to a week after the injury. If you are bitten by a Malaclaw, All bets, wagers, and speculative ventures should be cancelled, as they are sure to go against the victim. Manticore. MOM classification XXXXX. The manticore is a highly dangerous Greek beast, with the head of a man, the body of a lion, and the tail of a scorpion. As dangerous as the chimera, and as rare, the manticore is reputed to croon softly as it devours its prey. Manticore skin repels almost all known charms, and the sting causes instant death. Merpeople, also known as sirens, selkies, merrows. MOM classification XXXX. Footnote. See classification footnote for centaur. End of footnote. Merpeople exist throughout the world, though they vary in appearance almost as much as humans. Their habits and customs remain as mysterious as those of the centaur, though those wizards who have mastered the language of Mermish speak of highly organized communities varying in size according to habitat, and some have elaborately constructed dwellings. Like the centaurs, the merpeople have declined being status in favor of a beast classification. See introduction. The oldest recorded merpeople were known as sirens, Greece, and it is in warmer waters that we find the beautiful mermaids so frequently depicted in Muggle literature and painting. The selkies of Scotland and the merrows of Ireland are less beautiful. Less beautiful crossed out. Handwritten note, ugly. But they share that love of music which is common to all merpeople. Moke. M-O-M classification, XXX. The moke is a silver-green lizard reaching up to 10 inches in length, and is found throughout Britain and Ireland. It has the ability to shrink at will, and has consequently never been noticed by Muggles. Moke's skin is highly prized among wizards for use as money bags and purses, as the scaly material will contract at the approach of a stranger, just as its owner did. Moke's skin money bags are therefore very difficult for thieves to locate. Moon calf. M-O-M classification XX. The moon calf is an intensely shy creature that emerges from its burrow only at the full moon. Its body is smooth and pale gray. It has bulging round eyes on top of its head and 4 spindly legs with enormous flat feet. Moon calves perform complicated dances on their hind legs in isolated areas in the moonlight. These are believed to be a prelude to mating, and often leave intricate geometric patterns behind in wheat fields, to the great puzzlement of Muggles. Watching moon calves dance by moonlight is a fascinating experience, and often profitable, for if their silvery dung is collected before the sun rises, and spread upon magical herb and flower beds, the plants will grow very fast and become extremely strong. Moon calves are found worldwide. Mertlap. MOM classification XXX. The mertlap is a rat-like creature found in coastal areas of Britain. It has a growth upon its back resembling a sea anemone. When pickled and eaten, these mertlap growths promote resistance to curses and jinxes, though an overdose may cause unsightly purple ear hair. Mertlaps eat crustaceans and the feet of anyone foolish enough to step on them. Niffler. MOM classification XXX. The niffler is a British beast. Fluffy, black, and long-snouted, this burrowing creature has a predilection for anything glittery. Nifflers are often kept by goblins to burrow deep into the earth for treasure. Though the niffler is gentle and even affectionate, It can be destructive to belongings, and should never be kept in a house. Nifflers live in lairs up to 20 feet below the surface, and produce 6 to 8 young in a litter. Nogtail. MOM classification XXX. Nogtails are demons found in rural areas right across Europe, Russia, and America. They resemble stunted piglets with long legs, thick, stubby tails, and narrow black eyes. The nogtail will creep into a sty and suckle an ordinary sow alongside her own young. The longer the nogtail is left undetected, and the bigger it grows, the longer the blight on the farm into which it has entered. The nogtail is exceptionally fast and difficult to catch, though if chased beyond the boundaries of a farm by a pure white dog, it will never return. The Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, Pest Subdivision, keeps a dozen albino bloodhounds for this purpose. Nundu. MOM classification XXXXX. This East African beast is arguably the most dangerous in the world. A gigantic leopard that moves silently despite its size, and whose breath causes disease virulent enough to eliminate entire villages, it has never yet been subdued by fewer than 100 skilled wizards working together. Akami. MOM classification XXXX. The Akami is found in the Far East and India. A plumed, two-legged winged creature with a serpentine body, the Akami may reach a length of 15 feet. It feeds mainly on rats and birds, though has been known to carry off monkeys. The Akami is aggressive to all who approach it, particularly in defense of its eggs, whose shells are made of the purest, softest silver. Phoenix. MOM classification XXXX. Footnote. The phoenix gains an XXXX rating not because it is aggressive, but because very few wizards have ever succeeded in domesticating it. End of footnote. The phoenix is a magnificent swan-sized scarlet bird with a long golden tail, beak, and talons. It nests on mountain peaks and is found in Egypt, India, and China. The phoenix lives to an immense age, as it can regenerate, bursting into flames when its body begins to fail, and rising again from the ashes as a chick. The phoenix is a gentle creature that has never been known to kill, and eats only herbs. Like the diracol, see page 9, it can disappear and reappear at will. Phoenix song is magical. It is reputed to increase the courage of the pure of heart and to strike fear into the hearts of the impure. Phoenix tears have powerful healing properties. Pixie. MOM classification XXX. Handwritten note. But XXXXXXX if you're Lockhart. The pixie is mostly found in Cornwall, England. Electric blue in color, up to 8 inches in height, and very mischievous, the pixie delights in tricks and practical jokes of all descriptions. Although wingless, it can fly, and has been known to seize unwary humans by the ears and deposit them at the tops of tall trees and buildings. Pixies produce a high-pitched jabbering intelligible only to other pixies. They bear live young. Plimpy. MOM classification XXX. The plimpy is a spherical mottled fish distinguished by its two long legs ending in webbed feet. It inhabits deep lakes, where it will prowl the bottom in search of food, preferring water snails. The plimpy is not particularly dangerous, though it will nibble the feet and clothing of swimmers. It is considered a pest by merpeople, who deal with it by tying its rubbery legs in a knot. The plimpy then drifts away, unable to steer, and cannot return until it has untied itself, which may take hours. Pogrebin, MOM classification XXX. The pogrebin is a Russian demon, barely a foot tall, with a hairy body, but a smooth, oversized gray head. When crouching, the pogrebin resembles a shiny, round rock. Pogrebins are attracted to humans, and enjoy tailing them, staying in their shadow and crouching quickly should the shadow's owner turn around. If a pogrebin is allowed to tail a human for many hours, a sense of great futility will overcome its prey, who will eventually fall into a state of lethargy and despair. When the victim stops walking and sinks to their knees to weep at the pointlessness of it all, the pogrebin will leap upon them and attempt to devour them. However, it is easy to repulse the pogrebin with simple hexes or stupefying charms. Kicking has also been found effective. Porlock, MOM classification XX. The porlock is a horse guardian found in Dorset, England, and in southern Ireland. Covered in shaggy fur, it has a large quantity of rough hair on its head, and an exceptionally large nose. It walks on two cloven feet. The arms are small and end in four stubby fingers. Fully grown porlocks are around 2 feet high and feed on grass. The porlock is shy and lives to guard horses. It may be found curled in the straw of stables or else sheltering in the midst of the herd it protects. Porlocks mistrust humans and always hide at their approach. Puffskein. Handwritten note. I had one of them once.
What happened to it?
Fred used it for bludger practice. MOM classification XX. The puffskein is found worldwide, spherical in shape and covered in soft custard-colored fur. It is a docile creature that has no objection to being cuddled or thrown about. Easy to care for, it emits a low humming noise when contented. From time to time, a very long, thin, pink tongue will emerge from the depths of the puffskein and snake through the house searching for food. The puffskein is a scavenger that will eat anything from leftovers to spiders, but it has a particular preference for sticking its tongue up the nose of sleeping wizards and eating their bogies. This tendency has made the puffskein much beloved by wizarding children for many generations, and it remains a highly popular wizarding pet. Quintuped, also known as Harry McBoon. MOM classification XXXXX. The quintuped is a highly dangerous carnivorous beast with a particular taste for humans. Its low-slung body is covered with thick, reddish-brown hair, as are its 5 legs, each of which ends in a clubfoot. The quintuped is found only upon the Isle of Drear, off the northernmost tip of Scotland. Drear has been made unplottable for this reason. Legend has it that the Isle of Drear was once populated by 2 wizarding families, the MacLiverts and the MacBoons. A drunken wizarding duel between Dugald, chief of the clan MacLivert, and Quintius, head of the clan MacBoon, is supposed to have led to the death of Dugald. In retaliation, so the story has it, a gang of MacLiverts surrounded the MacBoon dwellings one night and transfigured each and every MacBoon into a monstrous 5-legged creature. The MacLiverts realized too late that the transfigured MacBoons were infinitely more dangerous in this state. The MacBoons had the reputation for great ineptitude at magic. Moreover, the MacBoons resisted every attempt to turn them back into human form. The monsters killed every last one of the McCliverts, until no human remained on the island. It was only then that the McBoon monsters realized that in the absence of anyone to wield a wand, they would be forced to remain as they were forevermore. Whether this tale is true or not will never be known. Certainly there are no surviving McCliverts or McBoons to tell us what happened to their ancestors. The quintipeds cannot talk, and have strenuously resisted every attempt by the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures to capture a specimen and try to untransfigure it. So we must assume that if they are indeed, as their nickname suggests, hairy McBoons, they are quite happy to live out their days as beasts. Remora, MOM classification XX. The remora is a silver fish found in the Indian Ocean. Powerfully magical, it can anchor ships and is a guardian of seafarers. The remora is highly valued by the International Confederation of Wizards, which has set many laws in place to protect the remora from wizard poachers. Red cap. MOM classification XXX. These dwarf-like creatures live in holes on old battlegrounds or wherever human blood has been spilled. Although easily repelled by charms and hexes, they are very dangerous to solitary muggles, whom they will attempt to bludgeon to death on dark nights. Red caps are most prevalent in northern Europe. Ream, MOM classification XXXX. Extremely rare giant oxen with golden hides, the ream are found both in the wilds of North America and the Far East. Ream blood gives the drinker immense strength, though the difficulty in procuring it means that supplies are negligible and rarely for sale on the open market. Rune spoor, MOM classification XXXX. The rune spoor originated in the small African country of Burkina Faso. A three-headed serpent, the rune spoor commonly reaches a length of 6 or 7 feet. Livid orange with black stripes, the rune spoor is only too easy to spot. So the Ministry of Magic in Burkina Faso has designated certain forests unplottable for the rune spoor's sole use. The rune spoor, though not in itself a particularly vicious beast, was once a favorite pet of dark wizards, no doubt because of its striking and intimidating appearance. It is to the writings of parcel mouths, who have kept and conversed with these serpents, that we owe our understanding of their curious habits. It transpires from their records that each of the rune spoor's heads serves a different purpose. The left head, as seen by the wizard facing the rune spoor, is the planner. It decides where the rune spoor is to go and what it is to do next. The middle head is the dreamer. Rune spoors may remain stationary for days at a time, lost in glorious visions and imaginings. The right head is the critic, and will evaluate the efforts of the left and middle heads with a continual irritable hissing. The right head's fangs are extremely venomous. The rune spoor rarely reaches a great age, as the heads tend to attack each other. It is common to see a rune spoor with the right head missing, the other two heads having banded together to bite it off. The rune spoor produces eggs through its mouths, the only known magical beast to do so. These eggs are of immense value in the production of potions to stimulate mental agility. A black market in rune spoor eggs and in the serpents themselves has flourished for several centuries. Salamander, MOM classification XXX. The salamander is a small, fire-dwelling lizard that feeds on flame. Brilliant white, it appears blue or scarlet, depending upon the heat of the fire in which it makes its appearance. Salamanders can survive up to 6 hours outside a fire if regularly fed pepper. They will live only as long as the fire from which they sprang burns. Salamander blood has powerful curative and restorative properties. Sea serpent, MOM classification XXX. Sea serpents are found in the Atlantic, Pacific, and Mediterranean seas. Though alarming in appearance, sea serpents are not known ever to have killed any human, despite hysterical Muggle accounts of their ferocious behavior. Reaching lengths of up to 100 feet, the sea serpent has a horse-like head and a long, snake-like body that rises in humps out of the sea. Shrake, MOM classification XXX. A fish covered entirely in spines and found in the Atlantic Ocean. The first shoal of shrake is believed to have been created as a revenge against Muggle fisherfolk who had insulted a team of sailing wizards in the early 1800s. From that day on, any Muggles fishing in that particular patch of sea have found their nets come up ripped and empty, owing to the shrakes swimming deep below. Snidget, MOM classification XXXX. Footnote. The golden snidget gains an XXXX rating not because it is dangerous, but because severe penalties are attached to its capture or injury. End of footnote. The golden snidget is an extremely rare, protected species of bird. Completely round, with a very long, thin beak and glistening, jewel-like red eyes, the golden snidget is an extremely fast flyer that can change direction with uncanny speed and skill, owing to the rotational joints of its wings. The golden snidget's feathers and eyes are so highly prized that it was at one time in danger of being hunted to extinction by wizards. The danger was recognized in time, and the species protected, the most notable factor being the substitution of the golden snitch for the snidget in the game of Quidditch. Footnote. Anyone interested in the role played by the golden snidget in the development of the game of Quidditch is advised to consult Quidditch Through the Ages by Kenilworthy Wiss, Wiz Hard Books, 1952. End of footnote. Snidget sanctuaries exist worldwide. Sphinx, MOM classification XXXX. The Egyptian sphinx has a human head on a lion's body. For over 1,000 years it has been used by witches and wizards to guard valuables and secret hideaways. Highly intelligent, the sphinx delights in puzzles and riddles. It is usually dangerous only when what it is guarding is threatened. Streeler, MOM classification XXX. The streeler is a giant snail that changes color on an hourly basis and deposits behind it a trail so venomous that it shrivels and burns all vegetation over which it passes. The streeler is native to several African countries, though it has been successfully raised by wizards in Europe, Asia, and the Americas. It is kept as a pet by those who enjoy its kaleidoscopic color changes, and its venom is one of the few substances known to kill horclumps. Tebow, MOM classification XXXX. The Tebow is an ash-colored warthog found in Congo and Zaire. It has the power of invisibility, making it difficult to evade or catch, and is very dangerous. Tebow hide is highly prized by wizards for protective shields and clothing. Troll, MOM classification XXXX. Handwritten note.
My name is Gregory Goyle, and I smell.
The troll is a fearsome creature up to 12 feet tall and weighing over a ton. Notable for its equally prodigious strength and stupidity, the troll is often violent and unpredictable. Trolls originated in Scandinavia, but these days they may be found in Britain, Ireland, and other areas of Northern Europe. Trolls generally converse in grunts that appear to constitute a crude language, though some have been known to understand and even to speak a few simple human words. The more intelligent of the species have been trained as guardians. There are three types of troll: mountain, forest, and river. The mountain troll is the largest and most vicious. It is bald, with a pale gray skin. The forest troll has a pale green skin, and some specimens have hair, which is green or brown, thin and straggly. The river troll has short horns, and may be hairy. It has a purplish skin, and is often found lurking beneath bridges. Trolls eat raw flesh, and are not fussy in their prey, which ranges from wild animals to humans. Unicorn, MOM classification XXXX. Footnote. See footnote on Centaur classification. End of footnote. The unicorn is a beautiful beast, found throughout the forests of Northern Europe. It is a pure white horned horse when fully grown, though the foals are initially golden and turn silver before achieving maturity. The unicorn's horn, blood, and hair all have highly magical properties. Footnote. The unicorn, like the fairy, has received an excellent Muggle press, in this case justified. End of footnote. It generally avoids human contact, is more likely to allow a witch to approach it than a wizard, and is so fleet of foot that it is very difficult to capture. Werewolf. Handwritten note. Werewolves aren't all bad. MOM classification XXXXX. Footnote. This classification refers, of course, to the werewolf in its transformed state. When there is no full moon, the werewolf is as harmless as any other human. For a heart-rending account of one wizard's battle with lycanthropy, see the classic Hairy Snout, Human Heart by an anonymous author. Wiz Hard Books, 1975. End of footnote. The werewolf is found worldwide, though it is believed to have originated in Northern Europe. Humans turn into werewolves only when bitten. There is no known cure, though recent developments in potion making have to a great extent alleviated the worst symptoms. Once a month, at the full moon, the otherwise sane and normal wizard or muggle afflicted transforms into a murderous beast. Almost uniquely among fantastic creatures, the werewolf actively seeks humans in preference to any other kind of prey. Winged Horse, MOM classification XX to XXXX. Winged horses exist worldwide. There are many different breeds, including the Abraxan, immensely powerful giant palominos, the Ethonan, chestnut, popular in Britain and Ireland, the Granian, gray and particularly fast, and the rare Thestral, black, possessed of the power of invisibility and considered unlucky by many wizards. As with the hippogriff, the owner of a winged horse is required to perform a disillusionment charm upon it at regular intervals. See introduction. Yeti, also known as Bigfoot, the abominable snowman. MOM classification XXXX. A native of Tibet, the Yeti is believed to be related to the troll, though no one has yet got close enough to conduct the necessary tests. Up to 15 feet in height, it is covered head to foot in purest white hair. The Yeti devours anything that strays into its path, though it fears fire, and may be repulsed by skilled wizards. Handwritten note.
Chudley cannons!
About Comic Relief. A note from J.K. Rowling. Comic Relief is one of Britain's most famous and successful charities. Begun in 1985, the organization has raised more than $250 million for such charities as the Red Cross, Oxfam, Sightsavers, the International HIV/AIDS Alliance, and Anti-Slavery International. The Harry Potter books represent a new opportunity in Comic Relief's quest to make a meaningful difference in people's lives. A special Harry's Books Fund has been created where proceeds from the sale of Quidditch Through the Ages and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them will go to support children's causes throughout the world. Every book sold counts. 50 cents will send a child to school for a week and change his or her life forever. Log on to www.comicrelief.com/Harry's Books and see how the money from the purchase of these books is being used to help others. The Harry's Books Fund will support such efforts as the education of children, the fight against child slavery, and the reuniting of parents and children separated by war. The fund will also educate people about the AIDS-HIV epidemic and will support child victims of landmine explosions. What is so wonderful about Comic Relief is that its costs are sponsored. Therefore, it does not take money for its own administration from the money given by the public. This means that, in fact, because of accumulated interest, more than 100% of the money it raises, it passes on to charity projects. I have always had a sneaking desire to write Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and Quidditch Through the Ages. So when Richard Curtis of Comic Relief wrote to me, I thought it was a wonderful opportunity to help a charity I have always supported. Everyone involved with bringing these books to fruition, the publishers, vendors, and retailers, has enabled the contribution of a substantial proportion of the cover price of these books to Comic Relief's Harry's Books Fund. Thank you for buying this book. J.K. Rowling. End of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them by J.K. Rowling. Initial J, initial K, Rowling. Read by Eric Sandvold in the studios of Talking Book Publishers, Incorporated.